content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the special report headline, Money in America, Are You Underpaid? And that's the headline on the front page. The article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with a second headline, Paying for a Changing Job Market. New research shows how Raleigh-Durham compares to the rest of the country when it comes to salaries for different positions. And this article is written by Cameron Snipes. Only a few years ago, companies looking to fill job vacancies had the luxury of being selective among the resumes that poured in for hiring managers. Now, with the nation's unemployment rate at a 10-year low, employers are finding it more challenging to fill the jobs of today, much less tomorrow. At the same time, as the pace of technological change accelerates, workers struggle to keep up with what prospective employers want and need. Those are the conclusions of hiring executives, economists, academics, and others when they assess the evolving U.S. workforce. There has been a significant change as employers seek to keep pace with a tightening labor market in the United States, says Ryan Carfley, CEO of Personify, the largest executive recruiting firm in the Triangle. For years, the Triangle has been known as a hub for the technology, life sciences, and healthcare fields, and a place where the seeds for that talent are watered, cultivated, and plucked. But increasingly, these jobs are getting harder to fill. Companies are having to get a bit more creative when filling the vacancies in those fields and others, including offering more flex time and even hiring contract workers to fill in the gaps, Carfley says. But for companies that operate in the Triangle's hotbed industries, such as Cary-based Relias Learning, the approach has been selective for years. The proactive approach to avoid a skills gap has been paramount at the provider of online healthcare training for at least 5 years now, CEO Jim Triandafleu says. His company follows the hire-for-talent philosophy rather than hiring for specific experiences when filling in vacant positions. We take a very analytical approach to hiring and track metrics from our hiring pipeline, much like metrics are tracked for a sales pipeline, Triandafleu explains. But there's also a price to pay for the talent in this changing marketplace in the form of salaries paid. New research from American City Business Journals details salaries across the United States, including the Triangle. Healthcare professionals top the list of highest earners nationwide. The 2016 national average pay in those fields was $252,910 for surgeons, $201,840 for internists, and $200,810 for the family doctors and general practitioners. Chief executives ranked highest for non-medical occupations, earning an average of $194,350 nationwide, the ACBJ research shows. Other high earners include dentists, $173,860, computer and information systems managers, $145,740, and marketing managers, $144,140. Healthcare and technology-related professions made up nearly half of the 10 occupations that paid especially well in the Triangle, and Durham topped the country in the category of general and operations managers. The only top occupation in which the area did not perform well in was the family general practitioners category. Where robots rule. Technology undoubtedly will continue to hasten the pace of change across the industries. About 38% of U.S. jobs are at high risk of being replaced by robots and artificial intelligence over the next 15 years, PricewaterhouseCoopers estimates. The jobs that have been affected by automation so far and that are at the highest risk to be affected by automation in the near future are middle-skill, middle-wage jobs, says Daniel Culbertson, an economist in the hiring lab for job site Indeed. He adds that jobs that require performing routine or repetitive tasks are at a higher risk of automation than jobs requiring mostly cognitive skills. But Culbertson pointed to automated teller machines to show that technology doesn't necessarily gobble jobs. Everyone thought ATM spelled the N for the bank teller, he says. Instead, Culbertson says, what ATMs really did was give banks the cost savings to be able to open more branches and employ more tellers and take away some of the more routine functions of tellers. Jobs of the future. Of all professions, the job of wind turbine service technician tops the Bureau of Labor Statistics list of occupations with the highest projected employment growth between 2014 and 2024, with a projected gain of 108%. Next is occupational therapy assistants, with a 43% projected gain. Healthcare jobs are six of the next eight projected fastest growing occupations. The challenge for all employers is to anticipate areas of growth and identify the type of workers necessary to sustain and enhance that growth. That's happening at Credit Suisse, which is ramping up staff in the Triangle. Our established and collaborative culture is instrumental in shaping the interview and assessment process and helping us collectively understand who thrives here, says Credit Suisse spokeswoman Karina Byrne. And there are quite a number of charts with this article. We'll read the main one, headlined, What Do Our Jobs Pay? Research done by G. Scott Thomas. We're all curious about how we stack up against others, especially on payday. That's why American City Business Journals has collected an array of salary data for 72 prominent occupations across the country. The charts on these pages display local and national pay levels based on the latest figures from the Occupational Employment Statistics Program of the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. ACBJ has also gone a step further, making adjustments to reflect the purchasing power of employees in 107 major metropolitan areas. Pay levels in key sectors. Here are snapshots of select jobs within five sectors of the local economy. Each occupation is followed by the average annual pay in Raleigh-Durham and the number of local jobs as of 2016, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Construction real estate, electrical engineers, $107,330, 2,000 jobs. Real estate brokers, $57,800, 1,100 jobs. Plumbers, pipe fitters, and steam fitters, $48,390, 1,480 jobs. Carpenters, $37,130, 2,640 jobs. And real estate sales agents, $57,040, 1,150 jobs. In finance, financial managers, $131,770, 1,980 jobs. Personal financial advisors, $120,730, 860 jobs. Financial examiners, $77,490, 170 jobs. Financial analysts, $86,190, 990 jobs. And accountants and auditors, $71,200, 6,030 jobs. In healthcare, physical therapists, $82,380, 860 jobs. Dentists, general, $217,680, 540 jobs. Family and general practitioners, $182,760, 560 jobs. Pharmacists, $122,170, 1,280 jobs. Physician assistants, $100,900, 470 jobs. Media and marketing, marketing managers, $143,090, 1,270 jobs. Advertising and promotion managers, $92,620, 70 jobs. Public relations fundraising managers, $118,860, 230 jobs. Advertising sales agents, $53,270, 470 jobs. And public relations specialists, there are 1,350 jobs paying an average of $64,440. And finally, in technology, computer information systems managers, $136,980, 3,390 jobs, computer information research scientists, $97,310, 80 jobs, software developers, system software, $107,450, 2,220 jobs, computer systems analysts, $92,620 for 7,630 jobs, and software developers, applications, $98,680 for 8,610 jobs. And finally, we'll read from a section headlined, What Recruiting Execs Are Saying. Employers across the country offer their thoughts on the nation's evolving workforce. First, from Matt Welsh, Hilton Worldwide Vice President of Recruiting. Data analytics, cybersecurity, and IT security are some areas that have really grown. On the one side, now we have so much more data. That data is enabling us to do more and better things, so we need analytical capabilities to help us do that to serve our guests better. At the same time, we want to make sure we are protecting that data and make sure we are very careful with the information that we have. So cyber and IT security become critically important as well. Some of these jobs existed a number of years ago, but are becoming increasingly important. Next, from Jeff Luttrell, Alorica, Senior Director of Talent Acquisition. Generally speaking, talent acquisition is getting more challenging in most of our locations. We've got a mix. We're in larger markets like San Antonio, Houston, and Miami, but we're also in smaller communities across the U.S., so we see a big cross-section of what's happening where. A year or two ago, it was really easy for the talent acquisition team. We could post a job on our website and we would have candidates. We didn't have to work very hard. Now we do. Our recruiters have to source. They have to go out and find candidates. And from Chris Payton, Bank of America Global Talent Acquisition Executive. The way that we think about the talent space is through supply and demand. So Bank of America, AT&T, Amazon, where the demand for talent? The question is, so where's the supply? We're looking at all these different channels. We're always thinking, where's the supply of talent coming from in the STEM fields? We may be Bank of America, but we're as much a technology company as we are a financial institution. And finally, from Scott Smith, AT&T Incorporated, Senior Vice President, Human Resources Operations. We choose to invest in our employees because they are fundamental to our company's growth, and our commitment to reskilling is also a central focus of AT&T Aspire, the company's signature philanthropic initiative driving innovation in education to promote student success in school and beyond. We committed to invest $350 million to equip students of all ages, no matter their background, with the skills to succeed in school and beyond. Our programs, like those with Udacity, help AT&T and other companies widen, develop, and diversify the talent pipeline to address the shortage of current and future employees with technology skills. And now we turn to the biz column, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings. The first headline, Course offers new way to get on a roll while playing golf. Wait, biz can now use a bike as a golf cart? It can at Keith Hills Golf Club at Campbell University. The golf bike, actually two of them, arrived at the club's pro shop on May 23. It's the invention of Todd May, president of Higher Ground Golf Company and Higher Ground Bicycle Company in Tallahassee, Florida. Each bike sits on wide tires designed to be easy on golf course turf and stable on cart paths. Affixed to the back of the bike are two golf bags designed to lay flat against the frame to hold up to 14 clubs, along with other needed golf equipment. According to Campbell, May donated two golf bikes to the course because of his familial connection to the school. His brother, D. Byron May, is chairman of Campbell's Department of Pharmacy Practice within its College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences. The university also developed the Triangle's first foot golf course, a combination of soccer and golf, in 2014. Here's to the parties involved for their effort to boost millennial interest in the game of golf right at the source. Web.com uses golf to raise its profile. The Web.com Tour is back in Raleigh, June 1 through 4, for the Rex Hospital Open at TPC Wakefield, and Web.com says it is seeing a significant boost from the 10-year, $100 million commitment to the PGA Tour it signed in June 2012. When we started this 5 years ago, our name brand recognition was less than 1%, says Web.com senior manager Michael Young. Now it's greater than 50%. The Jacksonville, Florida company offers seminars for small businesses when it is in town and 30% discounts for its services in the market for the week of the tour and the following week. When we were holding these seminars and workshops around the country, one of the things the small business owners were yearning for was products and solution sets to engage with, he says. So after we came back into town again, they were looking to us for some tools they can use. Take our website from being an electronic brochure and help us get leads, help us get customers, help us turn our bricks and mortar into an e-commerce site. Powder Puff Game raises money for a good cause. Some of the area's young professional women are putting on eye black and cleats to assist the fight against Alzheimer's. On June 3, the Blondes versus Brunettes flag football game is held at the Method Road Complex at 10 a.m. The goal is to raise $130,000 for the Alzheimer's Association after raising $104,000 last year. When organizers say 500 people attended the game, a $20 donation gets you into the event, which will include food trucks and kids' activities. The Brunettes, by the way, lead the series in Raleigh 3-2. Carry Firm lends vets a hand. North Carolina has a rich variety of military bases, but what happens when those soldiers need a job? One company that looks to help is Orion Talent, formerly Orion International, of Cary. Just before Memorial Day, the company helped its 40,000th veteran land a job. Recruiting and placing veterans is our passion, says Tim Isacco, Orion's chief operating officer. He says Orion places about 3,500 veterans in jobs per year, helping them translate their military service into a civilian resume and get in front of hiring managers. We look at a pattern of performance of success, leading people, leveraging technology, but most of all, realizing that people are what gets things done, he says. Orion Talent has 225 employees overall and about 40 in Cary. While the company has rebranded, the commitment to veterans remains. The military teaches total quality management. It teaches leadership, Isacco says, and it teaches how to lead from the heart instead of from the collar, and how you have to inspire to gain trust and loyalty and build teamwork. Lenovo sets up new pipeline for Wake Tech students. Lenovo is teaming up with Wake Tech in a program intended to arm future IT workers with the skills they'll need to compete. Lenovo has brought on 12 Wake Tech students as paid interns this summer, kicking off a partnership that will be offered on a semester basis. Catherine Frederick, Wake Tech coordinator of work-based learning, calls placements like this absolutely the best. Not only do students get real work experience, earn money and college credit, internships can lead to full-time employment, she says. Good heavens, we can't even spell angel. Never mind long-lettered spelling bee-worthy words, North Carolinians have to think twice when spelling the word angel. According to Google Trends, it was the top searched how to spell term in the state this year. Google went back and looked at what words people were searching for and found the top one for each state. Moral compasses aside, North Carolina was one of only 7 states that had the most trouble with words that were 1 to 5 letters long. And finally, Durham Company honored for growing export sales. Congrats to JMC NC of Durham, recognized recently with a presidential level E award by the U.S. Department of Commerce in Washington. JMC NC was one of 32 companies honored for showing a sustained export sales increases over 4 years. JMC NC distributes parts and accessories for research and laboratory testing. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross praised JMC NC for quadrupling its employees to support its growth. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Retail and Real Estate page, written by Amanda Hoyle. The main headline, new owner of Glaxo's RTP campus promises distinctive changes. A California real estate investment firm with ties to a Los Angeles billionaire inventor wants to transform the now mostly vacant Research Triangle Park campus of drug giant GlaxoSmithKline into the Triangle's next center for innovation. Parmer Innovation Centers, an affiliate of Los Angeles-based Carlin Asset Management, announced on May 26 that it had purchased from GSK all of the 20 research, office, and laboratory buildings located on GSK's North and South campuses on Moore Drive and RTP. Financial terms of the deal were not disclosed, and the deed transfer had not yet been recorded as of May 31. But the combined assessed tax value of the properties and buildings is about $225 million, according to Durham County records. Of the campus's 1.8 million square feet, GSK will lease 700,000 square feet spread across four buildings it currently occupies. The company has signed a 10-year lease for the space, and a GSK spokeswoman says the sale will have no impact on employee jobs. A Parmer spokesman has stated that the new owner plans to spend $80 million renovating the RTP facilities, including new amenities that will be added beginning this summer. Planned improvements include a permanent food truck site, outdoor meeting spaces, updated walking trails, and a bike share program. The campus has been rebranded Parmer RTP. Stay tuned as we announce some extremely distinctive and exciting new amenities in the coming months, the statement read. According to federal and state records, Carlin Asset Management was founded in 2005 by David Cohen to manage the capital of Dr. Gary Michelson, a spinal surgeon turned inventor, philanthropist, and billionaire. The real estate arm of Carlin Asset Management is a development partner with the 400-acre Parmer Austin Office Park in Austin, Texas, that's anchored by General Motors, the Home Depot Technology Center, and Allergan, as well as the Parmer Riata Office Park in Austin that is leased to Apple. The Triangle's energy, quality of life, and highly educated workforce are just a few of the many reasons why Parmer is thrilled to join this growing region, the company said. Align Technology adds space on Mooresville campus. 1 month after moving into the new 4540 office building in Mooresville, Align Technology, the manufacturer of the Invisalign orthodontic products, has committed to an office expansion signaling more job growth for its East Coast base of operations. Align Technology in December had committed to taking 60,000 square feet as an anchor tenant in the new five-story 4540 office building that opened in April at 3030 Slater Road, and now the developers of the property confirm that Align has leased an additional 21,519 square feet. The deal brings the new 102,303-square-foot 4540 property to 41% occupied. A representative of Align Technology did not return calls for comment, but the company in 2015 had committed to creating 100 new jobs in the region over 5 years. With the new expansion, it is expected that the company will exceed that original commitment. Lidl to open first grocery stores in North Carolina June 15. Five of the first nine grocery stores that Lidl U.S. will open on June 15 will be located in North Carolina. In the Triangle and Eastern North Carolina, the European grocer has selected at least 12 sites, according to deed records and site plans. The locations scheduled to debut June 15 are located in Sanford, Greenville, Kinston, Rocky Mount, and Winston-Salem. The company also has Triangle locations under construction in Wake Forest and in North Raleigh. Prominent Glenwood Avenue office building changes hands. Glenwood Plaza, a 133,905-square-foot Class A office building at 3605 Glenwood Avenue in Raleigh, has been sold. The sale price was not disclosed, but Glenwood Plaza has a property tax value of $14.7 million, according to Wake County records. The building is also situated on a ground lease for the 8.8-acre property, which is still owned by the Garland Tucker family. Glenwood Plaza was 100% leased as of the first quarter 2017. And now we move to the technology and banking pages written by Lauren Onasorge. The first headline, Bank of America moves into car sales market. Bank of America, Raleigh's third largest bank in terms of deposit share, has unveiled a new way to shop for cars, and it's piloting the program in the Carolinas. The new platform, called Mobile Car Shopping Service, is the brainchild of David Holodick, the bank's Jacksonville, Florida-based product executive for consumer vehicle lending. It's his job to not only manage the business unit, but strategically grow and evolve the business over time. Holodick, a 30-year Bank of America veteran, says the platform's inspiration came from tidbits he gleaned from working in the industry. He read marketing intelligence reports, he talked to dealers, and he noticed changes in the way people were buying cars. It was about putting the puzzle together, he says. Consumers used to go to five, six or more dealerships before buying a new car, he says. With the advent of the internet, people do most of their research before they ever step foot in the dealership, he says. Instead of visiting a half dozen car lots, the average has decreased to just one or two. We're following those trends with the consumer to help them get the most of their work, most of their research done in advance. Bank of America teamed up with DealerTrack on the platform. The company already has more than 22 million users deploying its banking technology via mobile. Dealer partners are providing their inventory to the bank through DealerTrack, and the inventory, starting this week, is displayed on the bank's website. Holodick says customers can get approved for credit by clicking on a button. As Bank of America has an automated decision process for most of its applications, literally the decision can take seconds, he says. The approval comes with a 30-day rate lock guarantee. Tom Graves, finance director of Raleigh's Westgate Jeep Dodge Ram, says platforms like this one will clear the air when it comes to car financing. Everybody will know what the terms and conditions are when they walk in the dealership, and they'll know what the approvals are, Graves says. Sometimes people come in looking for a car that's out of their budget, and we have to be the bad guy. JetBlue plans further expansion at RDU. JetBlue Airways is doubling down on its Raleigh-Durham International Airport to Fort Lauderdale, Florida service, adding another flight to the route this month. And it may not stop there, says Eitan Kershen, manager of route planning for the New York airline. He says there has been steady growth in demand for JetBlue since debuting at RDU in 2006. The primary reason for the Fort Lauderdale addition was overall performance in Raleigh just being really strong for JetBlue, he says. It finally just became so compelling we were able to add a second flight to Fort Lauderdale. JetBlue has six focus cities, New York City, Boston, Orlando, and Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Los Angeles, and San Juan, Puerto Rico, Kershon explains. We generally think about our network as connecting cities where our customers want to fly to each of our focus cities, he says. And customers want to fly to RDU, he adds. For RDU officials, San Juan is one of five cities the airport wants to add. Kershon confirms JetBlue has spoken with RDU about San Juan, but cautions it's not the airline's next play in the triangle. The next likely addition is another flight to Boston, though he doesn't offer a time frame. A JetBlue nonstop service to Orlando, too, could be in the airline's plans, Kershon says. At some point, we'd love to do San Juan. There's just been some economic weaknesses in San Juan, and we'd like to get past that, he says. The airline's second nonstop flight to Fort Lauderdale also connects RDU flyers to JetBlue's significant Caribbean presence, he says. Currently, JetBlue offers nonstop RDU service to Boston, where it competes with Delta, Fort Lauderdale, where it competes with Delta and Southwest, and New York's John F. Kennedy International Airport, where it competes with American and Delta. Records show North Carolina's intense effort for Credit Suisse. Public records detail what the state of North Carolina had to overcome to secure Credit Suisse's promise of 1,200 jobs in Research Triangle Park, House Bill 2, and New Jersey. Credit Suisse, also known as Project Chagall in state records, announced May 9 that a shift in strategy meant a major investment in the Triangle. But emails and other public records disclosed by the North Carolina Department of Commerce show months of conversations between the company, its consultants, and state officials. HB2, particularly the NCAA's threat to keep championships out of North Carolina, played into the delays in a major way, records show. Doan Kelly, executive managing director at Seville Studley, the consultant working with Credit Suisse, wrote in a February 7 email to Commerce Secretary Tony Copeland and other Commerce officials that there was intense interest in the NCAA situation. In one email, Kelly wrote, "The concern, of course, is if they ban, how does a company announce a major jobs program? I am at Chagall HQ later tomorrow. Context would be helpful in advance of the questions I will no doubt get." But HB2 wasn't the only barrier to the deal. Proximity to New York led Credit Suisse to consider Jersey City, New Jersey for the project. Credit Suisse told the state it received a verbal proposal valuing New Jersey's incentives at about $100 million. Project memos also show an aggressive fight by officials in North Carolina, including the Wake County commissioners who met on February 6. In the closed session, the commissioners agreed that this project is critical to our economic development strategy, wrote Wake County Manager Jim Hartman. The county agreed to the Tier 1 Superjobs portion of its incentives policy, which allows for up to 50% of the additional county property tax revenue attributed to assessed value of improvements and personal property paid over a period of up to 8 years. Red Hat acquires California technology partner. Raleigh's Red Hat has acquired a longtime partner in cloud computing technology, California-based Code Envy. Financial terms were not disclosed. Harry Maurer, head of Red Hat's developer division, says the relationship between the companies has been building over the past year. Both worked on the same upstream project, Eclipse Che, an open-source cloud-integrated development environment. "We just got to the point where this made sense," he says. Heavely sells Big Top to American Underground. About 6 years after he first infused a Triangle job fair with circus elements, serial entrepreneur Chris Heavely has sold Big Top to American Underground. Deal terms were not disclosed. Big Top is a career management platform that includes events such as a circus-themed job fair where employers pitch to job seekers and an online job search platform. Through American Underground's media unit, Exit Event, the platform will expand, says Heavely. "The Big Top event and platform is so powerful," he said in an interview about the deal. "There's so much more we can do." And now we turn to the On Life Sciences page, written by Jennifer Henderson. The main headline, Rocky Mount Lab sues Cigna in payment dispute. Rocky Mount Toxicology Lab, AVUTOX, spelled A-V-U-T-O-X, has filed an ERISA, Employee Retirement Income Security Act of 1974, lawsuit against Cigna, alleging the insurance company has failed to make payment on proper claims. Correspondence and available claims documentation demonstrate defendants' employment of an improper and illegal claims procedure that has wrongfully denied and underpaid reimbursement of out-of-network benefits on claims, AVUTOX alleges in its complaint filed May 23 in the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of North Carolina. AVUTOX claims Cigna has, quote, violated ERISA by making retroactive adverse benefit determinations. To date, Cigna has improperly and unlawfully denied, failed to pay in whole or in part, or refused to process approximately 3,062 claims, and plaintiff has incurred losses of at least $2,467,490.34 as a result of defendants' wrongful claims processing, unjustified refusal to process and pay valid claims, unsubstantiated claim denials, and unlawful withholding of payments on new and unrelated claims to offset alleged overpayments on prior claims, unquote. According to the complaint, Avutox received a letter in August 2015 that stated Cigna had made overpayments of $2,727,118.08 to Avutox, and that in future claims, Avutox would need to abide by new proof of loss requirements. Avutox states it contacted Cigna for clarification and responded with its own, appealing and refuting Cigna's allegations. Avutox states it received another letter from Cigna in October 2015 that its tax identification number had been flagged to deny incoming claims without certain documentation. Since then, Avutox alleges that Cigna has failed to process valid claims and has informed Avutox it, quote, would be required to obtain the entire cost of services upfront from each Cigna insured at the time services are rendered, unquote. Avutox says Cigna has falsely represented to those patients that Avutox is engaging in fraud by requiring prepayment. Duke Spinout expects to raise $125 million. After a big stock bump May 25 from positive trial results, Duke University spinout Aery Pharmaceuticals announced it has raised a hefty sum. The company stated May 26 that gross proceeds from an upsized follow-on offering at the market sales are expected to be $125 million. A new drug application for one of the company's eye drop products, Ropressa, has been accepted by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration with a date for completion of its review set for February 28 of next year. And Aery announced positive Phase 3 trial results for another of its products, Rocklatin, on May 24. Virginia Medical Company to expand in Durham. A Virginia medical device company plans to keep expanding in Durham following its acquisition by Francis Stago Group. While Hemosonics is based in Charlottesville, it has an existing facility on Foster Street in Durham. It opened in 2015 and has signed a lease for a second Durham outpost on Stirrup Creek Drive, which the company is currently upfitting for manufacturing, says Tim Fisher, president and CEO. Hemosonics is developing a diagnostic tool for measuring the treatable aspects of homeostasis to stop bleeding in 15 minutes, according to the company. Fisher says U.S. Food and Drug Administration registration studies are currently underway for the device called Quantra, with commercialization expected next year. The device already has CE marking, with commercialization in Europe expected later in 2017, he says. Fisher says that as a small company in the triangle, Hemosonics was seeking to align with a large healthcare operation with a large commercial footprint that also had expertise in the thrombosis and homeostasis space. He notes that Stago, which says it employs about 2,400 people worldwide and has products in 115 countries, was interested in buying Hemosonics prior to potential FDA clearance of Quantra. The deal, for which financial terms were not disclosed, marks Stago's expansion into the critical care space, according to the companies. Quantra is designed to quickly identify the cause of bleeding in operating rooms and trauma bays, according to Fisher. Transfusions are incredibly expensive and incredibly dangerous, he says, adding that Quantra has the potential to provide information much quicker than options currently available. And finally on this page, we have a section called He Said It. The quote, the intent of the expansion is to augment the manufacturing capacity we already have at the sites. And that's Tim Kelly from KBI Biopharma, president, on the company's intended $30 million expansion in Durham and Boulder, Colorado. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to a Better World page written by Todd Cohen, who also publishes Philanthropy North Carolina. His column headline, Yao Fund Continues Fight Against Cancer. Since 2012, more than 22,000 women in 17 North Carolina counties who otherwise would not have had the opportunity have been screened for breast cancer, thanks to two mobile mammography units from UNC Rex Healthcare in Raleigh. Financing the digital imaging equipment for the units, at a cost of $115,000 each, has been the Kayao Cancer Fund. The Raleigh charity was founded in December 2007 by the late Kay Yao, the women's basketball coach at NC State University, who died in 2009 after a 22-year battle with cancer. Inspiring her to start the charity was a game, initially known as Hoops for Hope, that her team at NCSU first played on February 19, 2006 with the University of Maryland. Since then, mainly through games throughout the U.S., now known as Play for K, the Kay Yao Cancer Fund has raised $5.38 million and awarded grants of $1 million each to support research into cancers affecting women at four cancer centers, including UNC Lineberger Comprehensive Cancer Center in Chapel Hill. It has also made grants of $100,000 each to cancer centers in nine cities that have hosted the Women's Final Four basketball tournament, and it works to serve underserved women by funding programs such as the UNC Rex mammography units. The charity was born through the sport of basketball, says Stephanie Glantz, the fund's executive director and former associate head coach at NCSU under Yao. She saw this as a way to unite coaches, players, and communities of women's basketball. Operating with an annual budget of about $600,000 and a staff of five full-time employees, the fund raises $1 million to $1.5 million per year. That includes $350,000 to $400,000 generated through 200 to 250 basketball games hosted by teams at colleges and schools throughout the U.S. It also receives royalties from Nike's retail sale of apparel and shoes branded with the Kay Yao Fund's Y logo, and generates revenue from a golf tournament, which will be held in September for the third straight year in Pinehurst, that last year netted $200,000. It also gets revenue from events that third parties organized. Now, as it prepares to celebrate its 10th anniversary with a dinner this December, the fund is planning to launch a 10 for 10 campaign to raise $10,000 each from at least 50 donors. It also plans to create a local golf tournament in Raleigh, and it aims to generate more revenue from its Play for K games. To help do that, Glantz is visiting nearly 20 Division I conference meetings this spring. The goal, she says, is to fund more research and provide more underserved women with access to cancer services. Every person has been touched by cancer in some way, she says. The Kay Yao Cancer Fund is making a significant impact in the fight against all women's cancers. And in the nonprofit news, effort to aid food bank draws a large crowd. On May 25, about 1,100 volunteers from Triangle Companies packaged more than 190,000 meals for the Food Bank of Central and Eastern North Carolina. The event was the sixth annual Sortorama at the NC State Fairgrounds. Sortorama is the food bank's largest volunteer event. The presenting partners were BASF, Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina, Cisco, Food Lion, and RTI International. Peter Werbicki, food bank president and CEO, said the food bank was incredibly thankful for the support for the companies. Event celebrates sharing. The Coastal Credit Union Foundation hosted a Power of Sharing evening May 18, where the foundation and its partners awarded $419,500 in charitable grants and in-kind giving to 13 area nonprofits. Among the gifts was $77,050 from Blue Cross Blue Shield to the Interfaith Food Shuttle. Hurricane victims get aid. Movin' On Movers of Apex, led by owner Danny Wilson, recently delivered four truckloads of furniture to the North Carolina Baptist Men's Missionary to deliver to victims of Hurricane Matthew. Customers and employees of Movin' On Movers donated more than 35,000 pounds of delivered goods. "I'm thankful to my customers and employees who want to contribute," Wilson said. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page, where first we have a guest opinion. This is written by John Sanders, who is Director of Regulatory Studies at the John Locke Foundation in Raleigh. The headline, Occupational Licensing in Need of Major Reform. For half a century, making any reform to a state's occupational licensing system has been nigh on impossible. How hard? In 2015, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics could find only 8 instances of the delicensing of occupations over the past 40 years. In recent months, however, the ice jam over occupational licensing has begun to break. Since last year, several states have succeeded in implementing reforms of occupational licensing. Arizona, 2 reforms, one last year and another in March. Mississippi, Nebraska, Rhode Island, and Tennessee. From 8 in 40 years to 6 in just the past year. It suggests we're at a watershed moment for re-examining occupational licensing. For North Carolina, this is not something to watch on the sidelines. Here's why. Moral? North Carolina's Constitution recognizes the inalienable right of individuals to enjoy the fruits of their own labor. Occupational licensing blocks many individuals from even entering their chosen field of labor. Legal. The Supreme Court in North Carolina, Board of Dental Examiners versus Federal Trade Commission, 2015, dismantled the presumption that state occupational licensing boards are automatically immune from federal antitrust laws. In the court's opinion, a state licensing board may violate federal antitrust law if a controlling number of board members comprise active market participants regulated by the board, but the board is not actively supervised by the state. Indisputable. Fighting the many harms of occupational licensing to employment and consumers is an issue that unites thinkers across the political spectrum. For example, 2 of the most important recent studies on the issue came from the Institute for Justice and the Obama administration. Reforms in Arizona, Tennessee, and Mississippi point the way. They offer thorough approaches to conform and limit the state's involvement in an occupation to the issue at hand. If cleanliness requires inspections, if damage to third parties, bonding, if shadiness, registration, if insurance reimbursement, certification. Importantly, they would go no further than the least regulatory activity necessary. It's past time to start working on alternatives. The all-or-nothing world of licensure is coming to an end. And also on the Viewpoint page, we have a column written by Andrew Broad, who is Senior Research Fellow in UNCG's Center for Business and Economic Research. His headline, SNAP Provision Not Likely to Save Money. Recently, the North Carolina Senate inserted a provision in its proposed budget that would tighten eligibility requirements in the state for the federal SNAP program, formerly known as food stamps. Governor Roy Cooper's office claimed that the move would take food assistance away from 133,000 North Carolinians, including more than 51,000 children. Oh well, one might say, such is the age-old conflict between liberal and conservative policy. Conservatives don't like spending money on the social safety net, while liberals do. But there's one problem with that explanation. The Senate's SNAP decision wouldn't save North Carolina taxpayers one dime. SNAP is a federally funded program. In fact, for technical reasons, the move could actually increase the state's cost of administering the program. The tightening of eligibility rules would stop tens of millions of dollars from flowing into the state. Federal funding may not be free money. North Carolina taxpayers are also federal taxpayers, but federal money is a boon to a state economy, whether for military bases or food stamps. You can't applaud the former on economic grounds without approving the latter as well. It remains to be seen if the final budget will include this provision, but it's part of a pattern. The current General Assembly has a habit of enacting economic policies that harm the poor without yielding an economic benefit. There's a word for that. Cruelty. A prime example is the requirement to drug test welfare recipients, which is widely viewed as a waste of money. Only 1% have tested positive, a much lower percentage than in the general population. Then there was North Carolina's refusal to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. Studies showed that expansion would reduce state spending because the small increase in coverage and administrative expenses would be more than offset by a reduction in reimbursements to hospitals for charity care. Aside from increasing the number of people with health coverage and reducing the number of preventable deaths, Medicaid expansion would have meant more federal funds flowing into our state. Expansion would have created tens of thousands of jobs and averted the financial crisis now facing rural hospitals. Another example of this pattern was North Carolina's savage cut in unemployment benefits. Did you know that we are now among the stingiest states in the country? The NCGA justified the cut in 2013 because it allowed us to repay a loan to the federal government about 4 years sooner, in 2015 instead of 2019. If we'd repaid the loan more slowly, it would have cost us some interest, but unemployed North Carolinians wouldn't have lost hundreds of millions of dollars each year in state and federal benefits. And repaying the loan clearly wasn't the reason anyway, because the loan is paid off now and unemployment benefits haven't been restored to previous levels. These policies have consequences beyond public cruelty. Unemployment benefits and SNAP payments generate a big bang for the buck. Beneficiaries spend almost all the money they receive, and they spend it quickly. The state economy grows by more than a dollar for each dollar spent on those programs. In contrast, tax cuts for the rich return far less than a dollar. If these policies had supercharged the state economy, perhaps they could be justified. But since the beginning of the Great Recession, North Carolina has merely kept pace with the national economy. There's been no supercharging. One is left with a disturbing conclusion that these policies were designed to be punitive. And now we turn to the People on the Move page, where the spotlight is on Sarah Roth, Dean, School of Arts and Humanities at Meredith College. Sarah Roth, Associate Dean of Humanities and Associate Professor of History at Widener University in Chester, Pennsylvania, has been named Dean of the School of Arts and Humanities at Meredith College in Raleigh. It's at Widener, Roth says, where she developed a real passion for administration and relished the opportunity she had to impact more students' lives and strengthen higher education. In her new role at Meredith, Ross has the primary responsibility of working with the school's faculty and students, as well as with other college administrators, college alumni, and the local community, to support and enhance the vibrancy of the arts and humanities at Meredith. Meredith's current enrollment sits at around 2,000 undergraduates and 300 in its graduate programs. The School of Arts and Humanities employs 56 full-time and 47 part-time faculty members and numerous staff and student workers. Roth oversees and collaborates with 9 department heads. Meredith as a whole has approximately 540 employees. What's one thing you wish people knew about your job? That being a dean is so much more than just sitting behind a desk doing paperwork and giving an occasional speech. It's a dynamic job that allows me to interact with a wide array of people from across the college as well as beyond the campus boundaries. What are some of your major goals for your position? One important goal is to raise awareness among a wide range of constituencies about the vital role the arts and humanities play in the experience of all liberally educated students. Another of my goals is to foster an enhanced sense of community and cross-disciplinary collaboration among faculty and students within the School of Arts and Humanities. Biggest worry? The growing skepticism in our society about the value of the arts and humanities and the belief that future success for both individuals and society at large must come exclusively through the expansion of the science and technology fields. In reality, a thriving economy and a thriving society are sustained not only through an emphasis on science and technology, but by fostering innovation and creativity, as well as a broad and deep understanding of the human condition. Education, bachelor's degree from Southwestern University, master's and PhD in history from the University of Virginia. Family, daughter, Claire. And with our remaining minutes with the Triangle Business Journal, we'll read as much as we can of Jim Verdonick's column. He's an attorney at Ward & Smith PA in Raleigh. The headline, How to Improve North Carolina's Crowdfunding Laws. In my last article, I praised portions of North Carolina's crowdfunding law that I helped write. Shakespeare wrote words for Mark Antony, "I come to bury Caesar, not to praise him." I don't want to bury crowdfunding, but now is the time to acknowledge some faults. Here are some of the issues in North Carolina's law that scream to be fixed. Special purpose vehicles. Permit crowdfunding platforms and other intermediaries to form limited liability companies to invest in identified businesses. The advantages are it's not a blind pool, businesses deal with one LLC manager instead of dozens, and LLC managers perform due diligence and provide monitoring services for their investors. Testing the waters. Allow issuers who notify the securities administrator that are considering an offering to ask investors whether they have an interest before they invest time and money to produce full offering documents. Review periods and offers. Allow businesses to list their offerings on platforms while securities division administrators are reviewing the initial filings or updates. During these review periods, allow investors to express interest, but prohibit issuers from posting any binding legal agreements. Local public offerings. A local public offering allows greater freedom to conduct offerings without using a registered platform or broker, but allow issuers to use a registered platform or broker if they want to. Increase the amount issuers can raise in LPOs from $250,000 to $1 million. Eliminate filing all communications. In 2013, the SEC proposed that issuers must file all their communications with potential investors. The SEC soon realized this was crazy, but this requirement ended up in the North Carolina rules for LPOs. And to summarize, he also thinks the 6-month waiting periods should be eliminated and there should be some reciprocity between states. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time, and if you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138.